It's the summit of the modern-day superpowers as Donald Trump travels to China to meet Chinese President Xi Jinping. It's the first trip of a US leader to Beijing in almost a decade. And there's a lot on the table. Trade, tech, Taiwan. But it's all against the backdrop of this diplomatic deadlock in Iran. So, is this the reset moment or just another chapter in growing rivalry? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty, and this has got to be one of the most significant meetings between the United States and China in years. They are two superpowers. They're deeply connected, but they're increasingly divided. Trade tensions have definitely defined a lot of that relationship in recent years, but it goes way beyond that because this meeting is also taking place in a much wider global context, with China positioning itself as a potential diplomatic player and becoming increasingly important in the war with Iran. Well, joining me to discuss all of this is Scott Lucas. He's a professor of US politics and international relations at University College Dublin and host of Scott Lucas Worldview on YouTube, and Dennis Staunton, who's the China correspondent with the Irish Times. Scott, I'm going to come to you first, right? Because I think it's so important when you look at Donald Trump, when he goes on any of these meetings abroad, to talk about the relationship between the parties, because so much of Donald Trump and how he operates and the type of president he is depends on personalities and those personal relationships as he sees it. So some of his recurring descriptions of his relationship with Xi Jinping are, we've got a very special relationship, we've developed a friendship, it's a fantastic one, it's a strong and personal relationship. He's called Xi an incredible man, he's brilliant. I was going to use my best Donald Trump accent there, but do you know what, I'm just going to save the listeners this morning. In your opinion, Scott, are they besties, as the kids would say?
I'm definitely not going to try a Donald Trump accent. But I will tell you that Donald Trump would like to be Xi Jinping's bestie on a personal level because he admires Xi Jinping. If you go back to Trump's first term, he talked about how Xi is president for life, in a sense, because Donald Trump would like to be president for life in the U.S. And the outcome of this is that we get like two different levels of the U.S.-China relationship that are somewhat contradictory. So you get Trump really wanting to impress Xi, really wanting to be liked by Xi, really being flattered by the Chinese when they host him, as they did during his first term. And then on the other level, you have these really serious issues where the U.S. and China are sometimes at odds or in even possibly open conflict. And, you know, we could be talking about tariffs. We could be talking about technological competition. We could be talking about the situation over Taiwan. We could definitely be talking about the fact that the U.S. is in a bit of a mess with its war in Iran. But the overall fundamental, beyond Trump's desire to be liked by Xi and beyond the specific issues, is China is pursuing an alternate economic, political, and military system, one which parallels but is very different from the post-1945 international system we have. And the Trump administration is arguably undermining that post-1945 system, whether because of Trump's ego or because of its own transactional approach. And that gives China's opportunities. It gives China opportunities by manipulating Trump to put forth its vision of what the 21st century world should be like.
I mentioned there in the introduction that these are two superpowers. Do you think Donald Trump goes in and thinks of China and thinks of Xi Jinping as an equal in there, that they are playing on a level playing field? Or does Donald Trump go into these meetings always thinking, I have the upper hand here? At the end of the day, I am in charge of a bigger economy, a bigger military.
And again, Kira, we've got to go to two different levels, which is one level, you know, if you had another person who happened to be president, they could be looking in terms of these economic, political, military factors and be making that assessment. You know, where are our strengths? Where are our weaknesses? Where's our compatibility? Where are we at odds with each other? But Trump doesn't think like that. Yeah. Trump still effectively is the type of businessman, which is, how can I look good and get something good for me? And the issue here is that all these issues we could talking about are secondary to Donald Trump getting a good photo opportunity. And, you know, that he can go back in the United States and look at me. I'm this very important president alongside this very other important person. He also, and let's be honest here, may be looking longer term at certain personal economic gains out of the trip. But he's not looking at this strategically. It is similar to the way that he approaches Vladimir Putin in Russia, someone else he also admires. And that is, at the end of the day, he wants to be treated as an equal by these other men whom he admires. And he's not necessarily thinking about an American interest as opposed to his own personal glory.
There's a brilliant piece in The Atlantic right this week. It's called Checkmate, and it's written by a journalist who's got really deep understanding of Iran. And he said, look, America's defeated here and they just need to accept this, right? This has been a failure for them. Do you think there's any thinking in the White House that aligns with that? And that will be going over to this meeting in China, aware of that?
I'm a bit of a poker player, Kira, and I think that for some Trump officials, and by that I would mean someone like the Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth, possibly an advisor like Stephen Miller, they'll double down on their bets. And that is, even if they've got a bad hand, they'll try to say, look, we put more chips in the pot and we'll find a way to win this. We'll win this either because somehow we'll draw a great card or because we'll bluff our way to victory. I think there are others in the administration who realize, no, they've miscalculated this badly. They made two fundamental mistakes. The first is that they thought that the regime would just collapse with the killing of the Supreme Leader on day one of this war on February 28th. That didn't happen. And then secondly, vitally, they did not prepare for Iran's response when the regime did not surrender. They did not prepare for those retaliatory strikes on the Gulf states. And they did not plan for Iran to use almost its last resort, which was to take control of the Strait of Hormuz. And that's where we are 10 weeks later.
I mentioned at the beginning, right, that this is a pretty high stakes meeting and there's lots on the cards, including obviously Iran. Give me a sense of what else is up for discussion here.
Where do we start on specifics?
Yeah, there's economic reasons, there's domestic political reasons, there's obviously the geopolitical. Give me a sense of those and where the priorities are going to be.
Yeah, I think if you start with the economic issues, for example, look, Donald Trump has imposed tariffs of more than 100%, 140% on China at certain points. Well, the Chinese will want to get out from underneath some of those tariffs, and they'll want to be able to import, for example, certain things like American semiconductors to boost their own high-tech industries. China, on the other hand, has these rare earth minerals that the United States needs for its high-tech development. So do we get a deal to open that up? That's one of the reasons why you've got 17 tech executives, including people like Elon Musk, including the outgoing head of Apple, Tim Cook, who are going over with Trump. Then you've got the issues where we've had in the past, which is the claims of technical and technological espionage. Will we get basically that being dampened down? So a live and let live arrangement on that. But then if you go beyond that, I think you talk again about these wider issues, which is this parallel Chinese system. In other words, China's not part of the international economic system as we've known it since 1945. It develops in its own, with its own financial institution, its own banking institutions, its own approach to manufacturing, to agriculture. Do they get the space to do that? Do they, or does Trump continue to try to threaten them? And then let me talk to you about the issues that won't be discussed, that should be, that are vital. Climate change, where you've got the two largest polluters of the world who should be trying to deal with this.
Doesn't look like it's on the agenda at all, Scott.
Because drill, baby, drill. Because the Trump folks don't believe in dealing with climate change. And the other issue, as we talk about hantavirus, only 6 years after COVID, is cooperation on global health issues. But the United States has walked out of the World Health Organization while China is telling the rest of the world, we're not only the World Health Organization, we can lead you in this. In other words, China exploiting that space on global issues where the Trump folks have basically retreated from a multilateral approach.
How are Republicans and Democrats in Washington reacting to the idea of Trump now going to China and having to rely on China at this point to influence Iran?
Well, public versus private here. privately, I think there's concern amongst some Republicans and not just Democrats at the damage that's being caused to the United States, not just in Iran and the Middle East, but in a global position where you have what was effectively the U.S. saying our way or the highway and hit a dead end. So, you know, what happens when you cast your allies aside and sometimes insult them? Publicly, you still have a lot of Republicans who are defending Trump and indeed will not even vote for the War Powers Act, which means Congress would have a say in how this war is being conducted. So at this point, I think it's interesting. Had this visit taken place with the U.S. and Iran as, you know, still in talks as they were only 3 months ago, then we would be focused a lot more on how do Republicans see China? How do the Democrats see China? How do they see Trump dealing with this? Iran is sucking the oxygen out of the room up on Capitol Hill right now. So we don't get a focus on some of these direct China issues as long as we're in limbo over what happens in Iran.
What do you think, right, given all the things that are up for discussion here and given how difficult Iran is proving to be for Donald Trump, what would be a successful outcome for him politically and diplomatically from this visit?
Well, there's a difference between what Donald Trump thinks and what I think. Donald Trump will be happy if he's smiling and she's smiling. And if there are billboards on China's highways, as there will be with his picture on it, if there's a lot of gold, which there will be, if there's a lot of Chinese military saluting him, which there will be. So I think he'll be happy with whatever comes out of this. That's very different in terms of where do we get signals on some of these issues? Do we get resolution beginning with China actually playing a role to help the U.S. get out of the mess in Iran? Then continuing to the economic and technological issues? Or do we get China digging its heels in and having manipulated Trump, then saying, all right, that visit's done. Now we get down to serious business, which will be conducted with other countries, countries like the Gulf states, Europe, the European Union and individual European countries, and indeed others in the Middle East.
Scott, it's a pleasure as always. Thanks for giving us those insights here on News Talk Daily today.
Thank you so much, Kira.
We'll be watching closely. Well, Dennis Staunton is, as I said, the China correspondent with the Irish Times, and he is in Beijing for us at the moment. So, as I said in my opener there, right, this is the first trip by a US leader to Beijing in almost a decade. But they did meet in South Korea last October, where they seemed to agree this truce almost, which eased certainly some of the tension in the relationship because of the trade war that was going on. Where is that relationship at right now, some 7 months later?
Well, it's a difficult relationship. And so what they did really was they agreed a kind of a truce in their trade war. What had happened was that when Donald Trump announced all of his tariffs last spring, he ended up imposing kind of triple digit tariffs, like over 100% tariffs on Chinese imports. And what the Chinese did then was that they responded by cutting off the supply of rare earth minerals to the US. These are minerals that are essential in advanced manufacturing. And so within days of this happening, car factories in the US were saying they were going to have to stop production. So that caused Trump to back down. And then the two of them kind of, you know, de-escalated. And when they met Xi Jinping and Trump in Korea last autumn, they kind of agreed to have a truce that would last a year while they worked out some kind of relationship. So on that side of things, they're discussing things, and they seem to be, you know, kind of getting somewhere, or so they say, in terms of coming to some kind of an arrangement, which again will probably really just extend the truce. And then what they're hoping to do is to deal with other kind of political issues alongside it.
Donald Trump is really flattered when China hosts him, right? He really wants to be besties with Xi Jinping, and Xi Jinping knows this. So no matter what the relationship is, or no matter what the tensions are, no matter what leverage and cards China's going to try and play over the next couple of days, there will be a whole host of pomp and ceremony because they know that Donald Trump is going to respond to all this pageantry, right? You've got to start in that footing. So give me a sense of the occasion here.
Well, just arriving in from the airport this morning, you see along the streets, you've got these Chinese and American flags. So that's the first thing he's going to see. And then the security is very tight around the place where he's staying and around the sort of the center of Beijing. And so when he goes to Tiananmen Square this morning to meet Xi Jinping in the Great Hall of the People, he will be received with full ceremonial honors. And the Chinese do this very well with kind of goose-stepping soldiers and ceremonial military marching bands. And Xi Jinping will come down this red carpet, come down 39 steps to meet him, and then take him into this to the Great Hall of the People, where they'll have a formal meeting with each leader and their teams on one side of the table, on each side of the table. And what they'll do is they'll say a few things in public at the beginning. There won't be any questions from the press, but there'll be a few press there to look at that. And then they'll have a closed-door meeting. They'll have lunch together. And in the afternoon, Xi Jinping will take Donald Trump to the Temple of Heaven. And this is an altar in the center of Beijing, where the emperors of China used to go to make sacrifices to ask the heavens to kind of bless them with sort of better harvests and all of this. So it's a very important place in Chinese imperial history. And there will certainly be a sense of occasion there. And then in the evening, there's going to be a state banquet. And at that state banquet, there will be all kinds of people on the American side, including some of the tech oligarchs like Elon Musk and Tim Cook of Apple and Jensen Huang from the semiconductor manufacturer NVIDIA, which is a very important part of this, of all of these discussions. And then on Friday morning, he will meet Xi Jinping again. They'll have tea and then they'll have an early lunch. And then Donald Trump will head back to the United States.
So in terms of the backdrop to all of this, I'm just wondering how Xi Jinping currently views the conflict and views the deadlock between Iran and the US, and how you think it impacts his view of Donald Trump as a negotiator and Donald Trump as a leader.
Well, the Chinese view of the Iranian conflict, the American war against Iran, is that it's illegal and it's a war of aggression, and that Iran is the victim of American aggression. The Chinese have an important economic relationship with Iran because they buy most of Iran's energy, although it's really not such a huge part of the energy supply that the China uses. But they also have important economic relations with the Gulf Arab states, with the Saudi Arabia especially, and the United Arab Emirates. So it's got an interest on sort of both sides, in a way, of this conflict. And also China's main interest is in ending it. It wants the Strait of Hormuz to be open. It wants trade to continue to flow. And so so China, although it believes the US was wrong, China would have an interest in having this thing resolved. And clearly, because of the way in which the US has failed to prevail in the conflict, it shows the US to be to some extent weakened. Also, the US has been moving various of its defensive equipment from the theater in Asia, like from South Korea, over to the Middle East. And so it's busy expending an awful lot of this very expensive weaponry. And so I suppose from a strategic point of view, China would be thinking that if it were to come to some kind of conflict in the South China Sea, that the US would be less well equipped than perhaps previously expected. And also just because you've seen how the Iranian mass sending of these cheap drones has effectively disabled the US military operation. That obviously would be something, it would be a lesson that the Chinese military analysts would learn as well.
How much leverage do they have? I mean, how much leverage does Beijing realistically have over Tehran here?
Quite a lot, but China is reluctant to get too involved in this kind of thing. Basically, it doesn't, it tends to have a relationship with its friends. It has no allies. It has only one formal alliance in the world, and that's with North Korea. So what it tends to do is to have these partnerships which are based usually on mutual interest, mutual self-interest, but it doesn't tend to lean too much on its partners to tell them what to do. So it certainly can help to persuade. It worked with the Pakistanis on a peace proposal, and the Iranian foreign ministry was in Beijing here last week. And so they can certainly try to persuade. But I think that, you know, whatever leverage they could have, they're not inclined to use it in too heavy-handed a way.
There's lots of reporting in the US that there's US officials who are really concerned that Trump is walking into this meeting in which Xi actually holds many of the cards, given that he would have a lot more influence in Iran than Trump would ever have. And that the Chinese leader may use that leverage to get what he wants on a really important issue to Beijing, which is Taiwan.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in a way, I've seen a lot of this analysis, and I don't find it all that persuasive because the Chinese don't tend to link these things too much. As far as the Chinese are concerned, Taiwan is part of China, and that is, as far as they're concerned, an internal issue. Now, they do want something from Trump in that they would like two things. One is for the Americans to stop selling huge amounts of weapons to Taiwan. And secondly, they would like Trump to declare that the U.S. opposes Taiwan independence. Mm. The formal position of the U.S., which is the same really as Ireland's position and most of the UN, which is that Beijing is the only legitimate government of China. And so they don't have diplomatic relations with Taiwan. But they're always rather vague about what the actual legal status of Taiwan is. And so that's a position that most U.S. administrations have been happy with. I think the Chinese would hope that maybe they could nudge Trump to go a bit further. And Trump has been a bit loose in his language about Taiwan. So a lot of the people who have traditional, fairly hawkish views of China in Washington are a bit worried, as you say, that he might kind of give away the farm on some of this, partly really through loose talk or through, as you were suggesting, being susceptible to some flattery.
What's the likelihood of that, do you think? And how significant would it be if he does go there?
It's kind of hard to predict what he's going to say or do. And
everything is hard to predict when it comes to these
visits,
isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's also just, I think so. And also the other thing is that, I mean, he could say one thing here and then he could go back and issue a Truth Social saying the opposite. And but, you know, I think it will not be that he's going to say anything necessarily in the meeting. It's more what he might say afterwards.
Okay, so we did have this meeting, as I said, back last year, and there was this truce agreed. And Scott Lucas was saying, look, the best that Trump will come out of from this meeting is lots of warm optics and lots of picture opportunities. And for him, that'll be a big success. What signals should observers watch for to judge whether any real progress has been made in the relationship between US and China behind closed doors?
I think what you have to look for is actually concrete deliverables. So, for example, the Americans want the Chinese to agree to buy more soybeans, which is an important commodity for American farmers. They want them to buy more Boeing aircraft. All of those American business types who are over in China, they're going to want something as well. And then, and there's also some suggestion that the US, that Washington would agree that the Chinese electric vehicle manufacturers will be able to go over and invest in the US by setting up manufacturing plants over there. And Trump would suggest that this was a way of bringing jobs and investment to America. But again, many of the China hawks would believe that it's best to keep them out altogether. What China would like is, apart from the political things I mentioned in terms of language on Taiwan, what they would like would be that the Americans would reduce the restrictions on sales of advanced semiconductors. These are the microchips that are used for advanced AI, development of advanced artificial intelligence. And so the US is ahead in terms of this really sort of advanced kind of frontier stuff. But China is catching up and it's making its own chips. But still, there's some debate going on in Washington as to whether it's best to keep these chips away from China altogether, or in fact, if it's a better idea to sell them some of the pretty advanced chips so that instead of developing their own, that they would continue to buy American semiconductors.
So what I'm getting from you, Dennis, then, any sense that there'd be any breakthrough on Iran here, or that there'd be very sort of obvious influence of China on Iran here to agree to a peace deal or to open the Strait of Hormuz because they've agreed to do that on behalf of the US is unlikely?
Well, I think effective diplomacy tends to happen in secret. And so whatever happens in terms of something like this, you know, if it were to actually have an effect, it's likely to be within the behind closed doors negotiations that are happening between Iran and Pakistan and then Pakistan and the US. That's really the channel. Now, obviously, Trump can ask China to do something, and China can either do it or not. But we're not, I think, likely to see it in terms of some kind of rhetorical statement after Trump's meeting. You know, if something like that is to happen, I think it's probably more likely to emerge later. You know, if the current round of negotiations that Pakistan is organizing between the US and Iran, if they bear fruit.
Dennis, thank you so much for speaking to us from Beijing and bringing us all of your insights and your wisdom. Trump continues, as we said, his trip to China all this week, and we will keep you updated all across News Talk on that. Get in touch with us here on News Talk Daily, newstalkdaily@newstalk.com, or find me on Instagram @officialKieraD. Until tomorrow morning, take care.